You're listening to 101.5 FM on UMFM. Good afternoon, and welcome to UTalk. I'm your host, Ryan Funk. The end of May kicks off a week of awareness and a fight for human rights, of diversity and identity with Pride Week. The event closes off with a massive celebration and parade on June 4th and 5th here in Winnipeg. Today we'll take a look at the history of Pride Winnipeg, what it means, and what are the challenges people within these communities are facing. Let's also dive into understanding gender identity and the 2S LGBTQ+ community. Let's get into it. In 1987, Manitoba passed the Human Rights Code, protecting against discrimination based on sexual orientation, prompting the official Pride March in Winnipeg. 35 years later, Winnipeg Pride has grown to include communities of diverse sexualities, gender identities, and relationships. Although society has developed tremendously since the first Pride event, we must continue to fight for the rights of all generations to come.
So my name is Barry Karlenzig, and I am the president and chair of Pride Winnipeg. History with myself, I started with Pride 10 years ago, actually the first week of April, so this is my 10-year anniversary with the organization as well. I started 10 years ago as a volunteer driver and have sat in various different roles, such as director of logistics, vice president of programming, executive assistant to programming, acting parade and rally director, and then chair for the last 2.5 years now.
How have you enjoyed your time working at Winnipeg Pride?
Volunteering at Pride for 10 years now, I have very much enjoyed it. To know that we're a 100% volunteer-run organization, and to be able to sit back and just see in my 10 years of history how much we have grown and how big of a festival we have become. When I first started 10 years ago, it was a half-day festival, Sunday at the Forks. Now it's a two-day festival with 4 stages, national coverage, things like that. Just to see that and know that that's all done by volunteers, it's just amazing.
The big question is, for people who are listening in, what exactly is Pride?
In Winnipeg, well, and across the community, Pride is, and always has been, it has been the march for rights. So going back to 87, when the very first protest started in Winnipeg, there were individuals walking down Portage Avenue with bags over their heads because they were loud and proud, but at that time they could have been fired for who they were. And as that has happened, we've also, a great example, this year we just found out it's actually the 20-year anniversary of the Pride flag being raised in Winnipeg at City Hall. We've been around 35 years. It took 15 years for the city to feel comfortable enough to recognize Pride for truly what it is, and it has been growing as diversity. To this day, individuals look at it and say, well, it's just a giant party. No, it is still a protest. It is still a march for rights. Not everyone in the alphabet, as we call it, has equal rights yet. Back in the 80s and the 90s till now, a lot of the L and the G, as my predecessor always said, the L and the G have very great representation over the years. It's now up to those who recognize under those letters to bring up the rest of the letters of the acronym to make sure there's equal rights for all, for the next generation and the next generation after that.
We have to keep fighting for the rights of all, because what we're seeing coming out of the United States is a removal of rights and recognitions for a group of people, and, you know, them being demonized and ostracized within their communities just for who they are.
Even in Manitoba, rights, we're not perfect. Pride Winnipeg is not perfect by all means, shape, or form. We grow every year, and as an organization, we're going to make mistakes. We're going to stumble. We've been around for 35 years, so we, as I say, we've been doing something right, but we constantly, day over day over day, we're going to make mistakes, and it's how we work as a community to make sure that doesn't happen again and how we grow and learn from. There are still so many groups within Winnipeg, the BIPOC community, the trans community within Manitoba, the greater in Winnipeg, and especially in Manitoba, that don't have equal rights, that still face job discrimination all over the place. And it's sad that we're in 2022 and that is still going on.
I'm from a conservative community, and at least for myself and the friends I've been lucky enough to cultivate and find over the years, as we've grown and developed as ourselves, you know, we found that a lot of our feelings, myself as a straight passing queer man, it makes it, you know, much easier than for some people, but just, you know, the rhetoric and language that is used towards queer identities, it's something that almost, I'm 28 now, it's taken me 28 years to get comfortable in that identity.
My family was raised very Mennonite. Oma and Opa were deacons at their church. Every summer was at Gimli Bible Camp, that type of stuff. When I came out, I was removed from my church as a member. I was ostracized, all that kind of stuff. And that's going back 13, 14 years ago. Skip 13 years ahead. Yes, it's a lot better than it was back then, but it's still got a long way to go. And it's just, you see those things where having family in such a small town, like I have family in Low Farm, Manitoba, in literally the Bible Belt of the Bible Belt of Manitoba. And to have someone like my 90-year-old Opa, when I told him 6 months ago I was engaged and he met my partner, and at 90 years old, he's like, I don't understand, but I approve. And I love you all the same. As a deacon of a Mennonite church who is 90 years old, to have him say that meant the world, because we all thought we're just like, okay, at 90, he's had 90 years of history. There's going to be a certain mindset. And that's the other thing that a lot of individuals face, is the older generation may not understand. And right away they go to not understanding and get defensive, when it's okay, they don't understand. How do we help teach them and educate them? How do we educate the next generation and the next generation, where we know that we wouldn't be where we are today without those original marchers and protesters from 1987. And they still have a voice equal to those who are having issues today. But we need to learn and educate from what they've learned till now. And then at the same time, as the next generation, educate that generation on the changes that have happened since they came out.
It would not be nice to get to a point where we don't need to have these conversations, because it's just, you know, part of society, that it's not something like, oh, we got to have this long debate about civil rights and, you know, the importance of allowing people to be their authentic selves. How would you say, if someone is, you know, dealing with either their sexuality or identity, maybe they have some conservative family, maybe they've moved from a country where those rights and conversations haven't started at all, where would you say they can start to have that conversation with family and friends?
So I think to start that conversation, a really great resource in Manitoba is the Rainbow Resource Center and also Sunshine House. So both are two amazing organizations. Rainbow Resource Center has a group called, I think it's Newcomers Winnipeg, is I believe what the name is called. And it's a group of individuals who have immigrated here, who identify as part of the community, and either their family knows, their family doesn't know, but how they work together to help explain to the family or have those discussions. There's books, there's resources. Sunshine House is the same way. Both are two amazing organizations. And probably, as somebody who has talked with a lot of the organizations across Canada, probably without showing favoritism, probably two of the best ones in Canada that we work with.
Resources are so needed, because like when we're looking at trans kid and trans folks, suicide rates are so high in that community. So it's so important to have these resources for people to talk when they are struggling.
And it's so amazing to see, like, Rainbow Resource Center has counseling services. Sunshine House does as well, but Rainbow Resource Center has amazing counseling resources that they end up footing the bill first, because the province of Manitoba doesn't cover a lot of it until after the fact, or things like that, where a child may be transitioning and needs a counselor, and it might not be covered under the parent's medical, or might not know who to reach out to. So they have those resources to be able to book even same day appointments. They get same day appointments twice a week. So that's something that really, it's great to see. And it's something that not everyone knows. I know a lot of the GSAs in the schools know about it, but those individual students who might not feel comfortable enough to go to the GSA and know who to reach out to, you have that same question. It's like, how do we educate so that should anyone have any questions or any concern coming out to their family or identity crises, things like that, we need that resource book for someone to feel comfortable with, that they can go look at without being judged, or if they don't feel comfortable going into a GSA, they can walk into the counselor's office, or there's resources online. More people go online nowadays. As someone who, let's say, is transitioning and they're 14, well, if they're going online, chat history is, parents have chat history, blog history, all that stuff saved. So how do you explain that you've gone to a resource, Rainbow Resource Center, which is a queer resource center? What can we do as the different organizations to drop those barriers so that if someone has any questions, they can go somewhere that they feel safe to find the information?
I know you've mentioned a little bit of how the language differs between the United States and here in Canada, specifically around like transgender versus trans identity. When also looking at Pride Winnipeg's website, it also talks about GSRD, gender, sexual, and relationship diverse. I guess just what has been the evolution of language when we're talking about the diverse community, which the diverse rainbow community? Because I know a lot of people hear like LGBTQ, 2S LGBTQ plus.
For full transparency, if you were to take every letter of the acronym, you'd basically make up a 26 letter alphabet, or we always call it the alphabet soup. So my predecessor back in 2017 was part of a focus group with the federal government as to how do we create a new acronym so everyone has equal representation within the acronym. So there was surveys done, things like that, and it came up as GSD, gender, sexual, diverse. That came to Winnipeg. At the time, we were working with Poly Manitoba, and they said, well, the poly groups and the poly identified individuals do not fit under either one of those letters, so we think there should be an R for relationship. Now we're working with Two-Spirit Manitoba and Two-Spirit Mischief, where the question has been, well, those four letters don't represent us. Well, okay, what does, or what acronym? So starting back at the beginning to avoid building that 26 letter alphabet soup, because sadly there are eight different ways. If you go to eight different websites in Manitoba that are all queer businesses, they're going to have eight different versions of the acronym. There is no set. We refer to it as the 2S LGBTQ+, but other individuals refer to it as also 2S LGBTQIA+*. So there's different things. So that's where a couple of the organizations started with the GSD and then the GSRD, and we've had tons of community feedback saying, we don't think GSRD represents Winnipeg. Okay, so after Pride this year, we're going to have consultations with the community and say, should we be still be referring to it as a GSRD? Should we go back to 2SLGBT+? What makes it so that everyone feels that they are represented under the acronym that as the largest pride in Manitoba that we do?
It can be a real struggle sometimes, even for members of a queer community, to keep up with the ever-evolving as we learn more about gender identity, relationship identity, sexual identity, just how broad and diverse the spectrum of it all is. It can really be hard to keep up sometimes.
Well, for sure. And if you think back to the history, when the first acronym was created, it was GLBT. And then a lot of individuals say, well, why did it become LGBT? Well, the LGBT started when the women's movement happened in the late 80s, early 90s. So then that transitioned. So it's always, since it was first created, it has always changed year over year over year as years have progressed. It has progressed, but sadly there is, as a community, we have to think of an acronym that fits us all equally. Or every year there's going to be a fight as to whose letter is the first this year, whose abbreviation is the first this year, and so on and so forth. It really, it constantly grows, and we need to, as a community, find an acronym that represents us all. And if that is a 27 letter acronym, then it's a 27 letter acronym, but then everyone feels represented.
Different people use different language around, you know, what does it mean to be queer. Like, I like the word queer. It feels like it encompasses, you know, my experiences and what I've gone through, and my friends use language too, but I know some people don't like using it because of the backgrounds and how it was, you know, derogatory back in the day towards certain groups of people.
And I've only been out 13 years, and when I came out 13 years ago, queer was a bad word. There were so many different bad words that have migrated into, like, they're now socially accepted. And it's more, but that also is the evolution of history where gender fluid, things like that, gender fluid, when I first came out 13 years ago, didn't even exist. Now you hear it, or someone right away was 13 years ago, if you were two-spirit, you were automatically trans. Well, that's not the case. And it was those education pieces. So I, even with being with Pride for 10 years and being out for 13 years, there are certain times I'll slip up and I've apologized to individuals in full conversation saying, I'm sorry, 13 years ago when I came out, this is how it was. I need to train myself and reteach myself to learn for the better. It's even interesting, like you look at the 35-year history of Pride, Winnipeg. I'm the first bisexual president the organization's ever had in 35 years of history. It's a milestone within itself, but it's a lot of the organization and a lot of people in the community are, they're shocked. But it's also because when back in the 80s and back in the 90s, a lot of the G and the L picked on the B and basically said, pick a side.
Yeah, and I mean, some of that rhetoric is still online when you're looking at just social media. There's still a bit of divide or playing for teams.
Yeah, and it's like I was in an international conference in Athens in 2019, and I had someone from another Pride in Europe come up to me and flat out say, oh, you're bi, why can't you pick a side? And I'm like, I'm at a national conference of Pride organizers, an international conference of Pride organizers. I should not be having this conversation or hearing this conversation, this type of thing. So even hearing it there, I was like, you can't, it's sad. Or you have individuals who are dating someone who is trans and it's like, oh, how's it like? And it's like, well, how's what like? And it's none of your business.
It's like dating a person. What?
Exactly. My fiance is trans and I've had people come up and be like, oh, and ask questions. I'm like, I've known you for 20 years. This is not a question that's any of your business. And how dare you? And I get offended. And they're just like, well, why are you offended? Would you ask this to any of your straight friends? Well, no. Then why are you asking?
What do you think are some immediate steps that as not just the Pride and Rainbow community can take, but communities as a whole to work towards inclusion and acceptance?
I think one of the biggest things we can do, and it puts the pressure on not just government, but big business as well, is to leverage the community partners that are out there and do inclusivity training, gender neutral training, pride training, like education, where you have organizations who sadly, as we're getting Pride kicks off in 8 days, you're going to all of a sudden see a ton of rainbows across Manitoba. 50% of those companies put it up for the month to get the business and take the rainbow back down. As the rest of industry should be standing up to those organizations, not just the Pride organizers. The rest of the industry should be saying, what are you doing to support the next generation? What are you doing to support inclusion and diversity? Do you have a diversity policy? Do you have an inclusion policy? Do you have someone in your office that if someone has an issue they can come to that isn't going to be judged based on their sexual orientation? As much as it's illegal, is HR going to give a dirty look, or is something going to happen? Or are they just going to be like, oh, if someone comes and says, I'm transitioning and I need a safe space, or is that company going to automatically be like, okay, well, we have a change room here. We have a family change room. There you go. And put them in a corner. Are you going to educate your team? Are you going to educate your staff? Are you going to educate the community? And it all starts with the bigger businesses that the community leaders work with, and sadly the ones that, I hate to say it, in industry, but as we all know, money makes the world turn around. So it's up to those industry leaders, and we see a lot of those industry leaders that we work with Pride, who have put their money where their mouth is, but also put diversity and inclusion as a number one thing. We've seen it this year with VRT Canada Pride. We've seen it throughout the year, where we see companies this year that have never been parts of Prides over the years, and all of a sudden they're just like, well, we want to be part of Pride. Your first thought is, okay, well, are they going after the pink doll? And you actually meet with them and realize that over COVID, they've created an entire diversity team. They've looked at redoing all of their policies, their workplace safety, all that kind of stuff. And it just, you sit back and you can't believe that a company has taken that much effort during a global pandemic to make those changes for their employees so that when they return to work, they're returning to work safe. And seeing partners like that is just amazing. Like one partner that comes to mind, and it's not trying to do partner shoutouts or anything, but like PCL Construction has been a partner of ours for a couple of years. they have some of their executive leaders from across the world that are going to be here for Pride Week. And they're like, some of our individuals from across the world don't understand what a two-spirit powwow is, or don't understand what Pride is. As a partner, can we come to the site during setup and have a tour by somebody from your organization to explain? I'm like, sure, I'm happy to do those types of tours because it's education, it's training. And it's those things where it's a partner who locally does so much, and now they're basically taking their local organization, going national and saying, we do this as a global company, you need to follow suit. And that is just amazing to see. And that's the big thing, is education is key, always has been.
It's not just Pride event, it's all these awareness days throughout the year, like Black History Month or mental health awareness. These are all things that need to be in the public and, you know, corporate mind year round. It's not just this fun short-term event where you can get some colorful or specialized memorabilia.
It's the education, but it's also, like you said, using, like, Pride's mandate has always been, our main mandate 35 years is put on a festival and a parade. We are slowly changing our mandate, as are all the community partners over the next couple of years. But we're also being smart about it, where we're working with our community partners and saying, okay, well, if your mission and vision is this, why would ours be the same thing? You're diluting the waters. Why don't we all come up with mission and visions that all work together for the greater good? So we're waiting for Rainbow Resource Center. They're doing a revision and a remission. Once they've set theirs, then other organizations, we can set ours and plan accordingly. But it's that education year round. It's that discussion year round. There is more than just, Pride isn't just Pride Month. Pride is 365 days a year. Diversity and inclusion is many times a year. There's Black History Month. There's Indigenous Day. There is so many things and so many important milestone dates in Canada, especially, that need recognition. Truth and Reconciliation Day right now is only recognized by the Fed or by the provincial government, where individuals get the day off with pay so that they can truth and reconcile. A lot of other companies haven't taken that on yet because they're just like, well, it's a day that we're going to lose employees. You know what? That shouldn't be on the matter. It's about truth and reconciliation and looking at what the generations before us did and how it's up to us to fix their mistakes to make sure that the next generation doesn't have to go through what the previous generation did and what our generation has done.
We're all in this together, and this sort of mentality and unity is something that we can work towards all of the current issues that we're seeing. Housing, climate change, food scarcity. Like, these are all things that we can, each is very important, but, you know, we need to come together to solve all of these problems.
Something big in the festival industry is everyone used to bring water bottles. Now all of us have banned plastic water bottles on the site. Bring your own reusable water bottle, things like that, because it's about the environment. It's leveraging those bigger groups or bigger events to also educate not just on the Pride movement and the political movement, but also educate on environmental sustainability, accessibility. Like, there's so many different pieces. And it's, I think back to, more companies now are doing pronouns on their signatures. And a lot of people are like, oh, well, the pronouns on signatures got started by the queer community. I'm like, no, we just helped for it. We pushed it along, but it got started on various different things. And then it's like, you have to explain to someone, they're just like, well, is it just because someone identifies as this? I'm like, no, I said, I've used this as an example in my day job, and I've had to, where you have someone who has the name Robin. Well, you don't know when you're talking to Robin automatically how Robin identifies. If Robin puts their pronouns on their signature, you do. Social acceptance in the business world always used to be that you would always put in a letter, Mr., Miss, so-and-so. Now, the Mr. and Miss is completely taken out. You refer to the individual as their first name. 10 years ago, that was against business regulations and rules, and it looked unprofessional. Now it's the most professional way to do it. And it's those small little things that, again, education, and there's so much to learn day in and day out.
And it's just an evolution of etiquette and how you...
Yeah, and it's also like, you don't walk up to somebody and say, hi, I'm so-and-so, what's your pronouns? It's like, no, hi, I'm Barry, my pronouns are he, him. Because some people don't identify with pronouns. We have an individual on our board who does not identify with pronouns, and that is their choice. They have said that, and it's, and then people right away are just like, well, you have to have a pronoun. You don't have to have a pronoun. You don't have to have anything. And again, it's that education, it's that as we're evolving, there's also going to be stumbling blocks, and someone's like, well, we've evolved for this, so everybody should do it. No, it's the same thing as employers being like, okay, everybody has to put pronouns on their signatures now. Nope, you're taking what is a great idea and completely shooting it out the window.
Well, I identify as a progressive, and you know, the whole point of the progressive movement is to progress forward, to change. When something, you know, you work towards something, and then at that point, you can work towards the next thing, and the next thing, and the next thing. There's never a stagnant spot where you're like, we're good, we've solved all the problems, let's don't bring it up anymore.
Every year, every week, every month, there is always going to be something. And that's where, sadly, a lot of individuals also need to realize, as the movements grow and as education grows and diversity grows, it goes back to that saying is, you're not going to please everybody. You're not going to make everyone happy. And that's hard for some people to understand sometimes, where when I came out, I lost one of my aunts. One of my aunts hasn't talked to me in 13 years since I came out. And people are like, well, does it bother you? I said, it did when it first happened. But now it's like, you know what? They're lost. And sadly, it's those things where it's also, we have to realize that when some people come out, they lose their entire family. Their entire family will ostracize them. So how do we as a community build that person up? Because like you said, the high suicide rates, there's so many things there. So you look at Club 200 at Thanksgiving, we'll do a Thanksgiving dinner for everyone. And you turn in and it's, I've been single, I've gone with individuals and friends and things like that. And we've had individuals that have immigrated here. They're like, I have nowhere to go for Thanksgiving. It's like, great, come to Club 200, let's have turkey. And you build your pride family, you build your drag family. I'm part of the drag group. So it's like, you build your pride family, your drag family, where you have more than one family. And it's okay to have more than one family. You have a support system, and there's so many people in our community that don't have that support system that we need to be there to help them. And that's a major thing.
Where can people go to find out more about Pride Winnipeg, and when does Pride officially start?
So to find out more about Pride Winnipeg, go to pridewinnipeg.com or Pride Winnipeg on our Facebook or Instagram, or our Pride Winnipeg app that we have for Pride season. And Pride kicks off officially next Friday with the flag raising at City Hall at noon, followed by the festival June 4th and 5th at the Forks this year with our new Canada stage and some amazing headliners. Catch them all on the Pride Winnipeg app. Through until the end.
I want to love you like a martyr. I want to love you like a king. I want to love you like a god. I want to love you more than I've loved anything. I want to love you like a poet. I want to love you like an artist.
Shoreline. spoke. Looking down the lake, the direction you came.
Recognizes the struggles and discrimination those in the 2S LGBTQ plus community have gone through, and a promise to work towards a brighter future. Although there are scatterings of other days throughout the year, it's important to have these conversations year-round. Let's sit down with Bree Giesbrecht from the Rainbow Resource Center to navigate the conversation of gender identity, pronouns, and to share services available for individuals and families.
My name is Bree Giesbrecht. My pronouns are they, them, and I am the Training and Education Coordinator at Rainbow Resource Center.
It's so awesome that you're chatting with me about this, because just myself dealing with identity issues and like sexual orientation, and for many people, like it's such a challenge. There's still so many issues out there in terms of the rainbow community. So I guess let's just start with, you know, we had Pride back in summer, and there are several awareness days throughout the year. Do you feel we should be talking about, you know, the issues that are surrounding queer individuals more?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it very much is a topic that is relevant to us. LGBTQ plus folks exist every day of the year. And that's not to say we need to be having pride parades and events and remembrance days every single day. But just because we aren't talking about it doesn't mean those folks don't exist, and it doesn't mean that those folks aren't facing discrimination and harassment. And so it really is relevant all the time. And just because pride ends doesn't mean those folks cease to exist. So it is relevant 365 days of the year.
I think it's also important, as we've seen in the media with Dave Chappelle and his take on the Netflix special for transgender folks, it can be dangerous for people when, you know, these stigmas, misunderstanding, and straight up bigotry is just kind of pushed out into the mainstream and not addressed.
Totally. And it was kind of the issue, too, that we saw with J.K. Rowling, with her posting and promoting these kind of like so transphobic, like so problematic, blatantly transphobic, like not even just dabbling kind of like surface level, like it just was straight up horrible. That essay that she posted about, you know, trans folks ruining children's lives or whatever it was. And then like the book that she wrote in a well-loved series, she wrote it under her pseudonym, Robert Galbraith. Well, it's a very popular series. It's, you know, well enjoyed, very well developed. I know lots of people who read it. And so to just kind of casually slip in a wildly transphobic book that causes so much harm, it really normalizes these ideas of transphobia, and it makes it easier for people to be like, whoa, yeah, I should be scared of trans women in the bathroom because they might be murderers because the book said so. It creates these, like a whirlwind of issues when it becomes so mainstream, these ideas.
For the folks who are maybe unaware of what the whole rainbow community is, what is LGBTQ plus? I know there's some other ones in there that I missed.
So Rainbow Resource Center uses the acronym 2SLGBTQ plus. The 2S standing for Two-Spirit, which is an Indigenous identity. It's placed at the front of our acronym, or the acronym we use, just to have it as a place of honor to recognize that Two-Spirit folks and Indigenous folks have experienced a disproportionately large amount of violence. So we have 2SLGBTQ+, L standing for lesbian, G standing for gay, B for bisexual, T for transgender, and then Q stands for queer and questioning. And then that plus is just really a symbol to recognize that there are so many other identities that exist within the community, quite literally thousands of labels. And, you know, if our acronym included all of them, it would be going on for way too long. And people already make fun of it as it is. So at some point it has to stop. And so that plus is really just an important symbol, and it's a really important thing to include to recognize that, you know, the community doesn't end after that Q. It continues going. We just, you know, you run out of room in an acronym at some point.
Yeah. I know, like, you hear that out in the street, they're like, oh, why do you need such a large acronym? It's like, well, we're trying to be inclusive.
Some people call it the alphabet community.
For someone who's maybe questioning their own identity, or maybe they have a family member, how do you approach someone when you think maybe they could be part of this community?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing would be, if they don't feel comfortable telling you, then don't push it. There's no reason to ask somebody what their identity is. And if somebody tells you, just kind of trust it. If they aren't telling you for some reason, it's maybe more of a reflection of you. And it's something that you should reflect on. If you're like, I wonder if this person is gay. First of all, if you're wondering that, it's probably based off of stereotypes, not based off of what a person's actually telling you. Because if somebody says, no, I am not gay, and you're like, you seem kind of gay, you're doing that based off of stereotypes, because you're certainly not listening to the words the person is saying. But that said, there are folks who don't necessarily feel comfortable coming out. And really, then the thing to do is making sure that you are a safe person, making sure that you are aware of conversations around pronouns, that you aren't assuming pronouns, that you aren't, you know, saying like, oh, are you bringing a girlfriend home, or are you bringing a boyfriend home? Like, not making those gendered assumptions. And that can make a huge difference, because if you're constantly doing that, it's going to be a lot harder for somebody to, it almost feels like admitting to something at that point, because you're like, you have this idea of who I am and I don't fit into it. And now I have to feel like I admit to being different than you expected. Whereas if you're interacting with folks with a very like neutral, not making assumptions, not kind of using these terms, it's going to make it easier for a person to come out and to share that with you on a neutral level than when they're feeling like they have to work against an idea you already have.
You want to provide an atmosphere where someone is comfortable. If they're moving from a country where it's illegal to be gay or part of that larger community, they might still be scared or have traumas from their life back there. Or maybe they have family members where they don't feel safe coming out.
Totally. Yeah. I know I have a friend who came from a country where it was illegal to be queer. And that was part of their decision in leaving their whole family behind and moving here just so that they could live authentically. And, you know, that's not to say that Canada is perfect, but it's so essential to have spaces where people feel like they can be themselves. And it's something that all people need. It's not even just a 2SLGBTQ+ issue. Everybody deserves to feel safe, whether it's because of, you know, relating to their mental health issues or disabilities or their, you know, skin color. There's so many different ways in which different marginalized identities deserve to feel safe. It's not just this like, oh, you know, the gays are at it again, trying to create safe spaces. Like, it's important for everybody to feel safe and like that they're not going to be discriminated against or hurt even more than they often are.
Any minority group, it's just a place where people have similar or the same lived experiences, where they can talk with someone. Like, for myself, I probably shouldn't go to some of these multicultural safe spaces on like a campus, because it's not for me. I don't face that discrimination or racism against me because I'm privileged, because I was born a cis white male.
That's not to say you can't be an advocate or an ally for those groups, but also recognizing that there is a sense of community when people can connect with other folks who have those similar lived experiences. and to insert yourself into those communities and to insert yourself into those areas where people are trying to connect with each other, it can cause a lot of harm. So leaving those spaces for those minorities to exist. And, you know, it's called minority for a reason. They're often, those are groups where they are constantly surrounded by people who are not like them. And so to have a space where it's like, everybody here gets it. Everybody here understands. I don't have to perform. I don't have to put on my like straight mask or my cisgender mask or my, you know, Canadian mask, like whatever that may be, where it's like, I can just truly be myself with these people. It can cause a lot of harm to have people kind of just assume that they're welcome there and assume that that's a space where they could also be.
Play the more supportive role. Stand back. Wait for that invitation. Don't just jump up in there. Talking about creating those safe spaces, being welcoming and open to others, you mentioned pronouns. I know online there's a lot of issues and contention around pronouns, specifically like neo-pronouns, but just what is a pronoun and why is it important, to use these specific languages?
Pronouns, it has become this whole big kind of like queer topic when in reality we use pronouns constantly. You know, if you're talking about, man, the number of pronouns I've just used in these past sentences, right? Like I'm saying we use pronouns constantly. We is a pronoun. Instead of saying all humans, I'm saying we. I'm saying I is a pronoun. You is a pronoun. These are things that we are constantly using in our sentences. But somehow people have turned it into like, oh, you're not one of those pronouns people, are you? And it's like, well, you just used an awful lot of pronouns in a sentence for somebody who isn't a pronouns person. But really where it becomes relevant within the 2SLGBTQ plus community in particular is this idea that the pronouns she and he, so like she, her pronouns, he, him pronouns, they have gender assigned to them. There is an assumption of gender. So she, her pronouns are typically more associated with women. He, him pronouns are typically more associated with men. For folks where their gender identity exists outside of those two very constrictive categories, they maybe don't want their pronouns to just kind of automatically associate them with one of these groups. Because like, I mean, I could get into gender stuff all day long. But when you really think about it, like if someone was to ask you, how do you know you're a man? Or how do you know you're a woman? It's a hard thing to answer, right? Like, it's like, I don't know. I just know it. It's just a feeling. There's no real like, well, you know, I had this epiphany at the age of 7 that like, yep, I'm a boy. Like for the most part, people don't have that idea. It's just like, oh, I don't know. It's just who I am.
It's always been there. It's always been exactly there. There's something about it. There wasn't that set moment. Like online where it's like, oh, this thing happened and then my son turned gay.
Totally. Yeah. And it's like, it's just who people are. And in the same way that for myself as a non-binary individual, like, I don't know how to describe the fact that I'm non-binary. If someone says, how do you know you're non-binary? I'm like, I just know. Like, there's no way to describe it. It just is like, this is just my existence. And so for folks who have that like really strong sense that they're like, I don't want people to see me as a woman. I don't want people to see me as a man. To have gender neutral pronouns makes a world of a difference. And it feels so much more validating to be like, oh, the language somebody is using for me is not making an assumption that my gender identity is that of a woman or is that of a man just because of the body I was born into. Because those are totally separate things. So it does absolutely cause a lot of contention on the internet. They, them pronouns, the most common kind of rebuttal, I guess, to using they, them pronouns is that like, oh, it's a plural pronoun, like the grammar's incorrect. But first of all, that's just wrong. If you want a fun little like history, English nerd fact, Shakespeare actually used they, them pronouns in the singular. So this is like 1400s. So like, it's not a new concept. And we use like they, them as singular pronouns all the time. If I would say, I have a friend coming over later, you would say, what time will they be there? You're not going to say what time is he or she going to be there. It sounds weird and clunky. Or if you see a wallet on a bus seat, you would say, oh, somebody forgot their wallet. You're assuming it's not a whole group of people. It's just one person's wallet, but you're using gender neutral pronouns. And so it's common in our language. Where it becomes a bit more difficult is when you actually see a person and you have to fight against that like social training to be like, oh, that person has a beard, must be a man, or that person's wearing lipstick, must be a woman. Because we really make these assumptions and we try to categorize people and we try to like fit them into these sets of pronouns just based off of what they look like. And so that's where it gets harder to use gender neutral pronouns, because we really like sorting people into she, her, or he, him pronouns. We like it. And like, it happens for me too, where I see somebody who I'm not even having a conversation with. Like I maybe just pass somebody, you know, at the grocery store and I'm like, whoa, I can't tell if they're a woman or a man. And then I have to remind myself like, wow, you know, like I wouldn't have been able to tell no matter what, but there is this sense of discomfort where you're like, I wouldn't know how to talk about you. But the reality is we wouldn't know how to talk about anybody. And so it really is breaking down those assumptions we have as well. I've been rambling for a long time about pronouns because I'm excited about them. I didn't even talk about neo pronouns at all.
In terms of the queer 2S LGBTQ plus, we could go on all day talking about different aspects, and it's a conversation that's continuing to grow and evolve as our understanding of these things develops. But for those who are maybe have a family member who recently came out, or they themselves came out, what sort of services are available for them, support groups or something, at least here in Winnipeg?
Obviously, I'm a little bit biased because I work at Rainbow Resource Centre. Biased and also more knowledgeable, I suppose, of Rainbow Resource Centre services. But the nice thing is that Rainbow Resource Centre offers almost everything. So we do have a youth program for, I believe it's for folks up to 21. And so that is a great option. It's like, you know, there's tons of programming that they do. There's also an older adults program for 55 plus for folks, because that's a community where often it's hard to find other 2S LGBTQ plus folks that are over 55. So they have a lot of programming that they do as well. So those are kind of like our kind of like primary
bread and butter.
Yeah. We sometimes consider them like the pillars, because it really kind of encapsulates those kind of two age ranges that often struggle to find community and don't necessarily have like workplaces or things like that where they can kind of connect with people. And so those are ones where we have like full funded programming. We do also have free short-term counseling. So often what our counselors do is we do a lot of gender counseling, kind of helping folks navigate those concepts of like, how the heck do you figure out if you are a man or a woman or something else? Also counseling for like family members, if maybe they had somebody come out, or, you know, if somebody is struggling with their parents not accepting them, like that kind of a thing. We also have a variety of social support groups. So there is one that I actually facilitate called the Den. It's for non-binary folks, but there's also one for trans folks, one for specifically trans masculine folks, a group for women, a group for men, a group for kids under the age of 12, a group for parents and family members of trans folks. So there's kind of a pretty wide range of support groups, and they aren't also just support groups. Like a lot of the groups also hang out and like just are a space to make friends and make other queer friends. And so that is one of the great things that Rainbow Resource Centre offers. And all of those groups are led and facilitated by community members. So it's not like a staff member, you know, kind of hosting an event. It's very community-based. We do also, in my position, I work because I'm the training and education coordinator. I do a lot of diversity and inclusion workshops. So working with schools and workplaces and hospitals, you know, a wide range of places to promote more understanding. So that's definitely an option as well. Like if you're like, hey, how do I get more involved? If you have a workplace or somewhere where you volunteer, you know, asking to do training, seeing if there is an option for that. Like, it's a great way to promote a bit more understanding within your workplace or within your organization. And it doesn't necessarily require a lot of effort on your part, but it shows a willingness to, you know, help your workplace get better, help your workplace improve. So those are just some of the options. Rainbow Resource Center also has like a really cool queer library. It's like all queer books. And so that's a really fun place if you're a book nerd like I am. We also do hand out like safer sex supplies, harm reduction supplies, things like that. So it reaches a lot of folks in the community.
Want to hear more stories and music from amazing people across Canada? Check out U Radio by U Multicultural. Listen in at u-channel.ca. I'm Ryan Funk. This was U Talk. And have yourself a good one.